Well, that's a perfect. That's a perfect. That's a perfect intro right there.
Welcome to 3 out of 3 Falls. A wrestling podcast. I feel like you laugh every time after I do.
I do
the intro.
because it just, you know, that's we're funny. Having an in-depth, intense conversation about, you know, something wrestling related, and then
it just clicks in.
It's showtime.
Yeah.
You know?
The voice changes a little. Yeah. We're a wrestling podcast where your hosts watch 3 matches, one chosen by each host and one chosen by the random match generator that we have, and we discuss them. And my name's Joe.
Hey, my name's Jason.
And we have some pretty fun matches this time, I believe.
We have 3 really. I think this is going to be a good. This is going to be a good episode.
Okay.
Before we dive in 100%, please go to our blog, tootf.tumblr.com, where you can see links to the 3 matches that we will be discussing. So, you know, in case you're not able to have total recall of these matches off the top of your head, that you can, you know, be up to date and ready to grapple with us as we discuss these 3 matches.
Yeah, assuming you've ever seen them. I mean, one of them is just... Anyway, we're going to...
One of them is maybe...
Never, this
Bobby,
wait.
Bobby Heenan says something in this match.
I know. I can't wait to talk about it. I can't wait.
Let's fucking get started. Go for it.
The first... We're going to start with my match this time. Jason told me
yep.
that. Whenever I say that on this podcast, it's not because, like, I'm demanding it. Jason tells me. He picks the order usually. So my match this time was Adrian Neville versus Tyson Kidd versus Tyler Breeze versus Sami Zayn, the Fatal 4-Way for the NXT Championship at NXT TakeOver Fatal 4-Way, September 11th, 2014. Jason?
Joe, these are all of your boys in one ring.
Well, sort of. One of the things I noted during this is that Sami Zayn is the most beloved of these 4 wrestlers by the NXT fans, and probably by WWE fans in general, then and now. And I think he's pretty great, but he is my least favorite of these 4 guys by a pretty decent
margin.
That's what
I was going to say.
So it's like 3
that...
of my boys plus Sami Zayn is kind of cool. Although, this, I believe, is relatively recent into his... It's like maybe a couple of months into his pure ska theme. So he was, like, really skanking down that ramp. And
oh, yeah.
It just makes you want him to lose so badly. It's the least appealing thing. And listen, I grew up, like, most of my best friends in high school... And to this day, were, you know, skaters, and they were into various types of punk rock, you know, and there's like heavier punk or hardcore that I was more into. Some of them were into the older, you know, like original punk, but some were into, and one of my best friends is currently now still, you know, has a soft spot for ska, and that's the stuff I could not get into.
Like, you're talking about, like, 90s ska.
Is there 2017 ska?
So
Metallica came out with an album in 2016, but I wouldn't call them 2016 metal. There is 2016 metal, though. Is there a new ska band out there? I don't know. There's got to be. I don't know. I'm being a jerk.
No, but, like, there was a revival of ska in the late 80s and into the mid 90s, late 90s.
Oh, there was ska
technically
before that?
A band. Yes, there was. Ska is originally from Jamaica in
oh,
the
that
1960s.
Makes more sense. Yeah.
Now, I love original blue beat ska.
Okay.
From the 60s.
I do
know about that stuff.
Let me ask
but anyway,
you a question.
So, no,
is
go
there
ahead.
A thing, and we maybe we'll cut this part. Is there a thing like I didn't like? Okay, so I like the Operation Ivy album, and I like a little Less Than Jake because my friend played it all the time. But
sure.
I mostly hate ska, and I mostly the horns thing. But the other thing I wanted to mention, because you just said ska originated in Jamaica, I also hate Sublime. Is it,
Ah.
do I just have a thing against white people appropriating Jamaican culture? Like white guys with dreads, barf, you know, like, except Bray Wyatt's pretty cool right now.
Yeah.
And Layne Staley had him. Anyway, there's like grunge dreads and then there's like stoner white guy Jamaican ripoff dreads, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this match. You're right.
But Sami Zayn does not have dreads.
No, thank God.
Thank God. I think that's the thing. I think that Bray's current dread action is great because he's like a heavy dub Rasta, you know, dread, you know, hair style. If Sami had dreads and was skanking, he would literally look like a mop. He would look like a mop.
Yeah.
Like a dirty, you know, fucking mop.
CJ Parker had dreads and he was like a hippie character and I didn't mind it. They were gross, but didn't he have dreads? So
three out of the four are your boys.
Yeah. And very quickly I'll tell you why I picked this match, and at the end I'll tell you why maybe it wasn't the right one to pick. But I have mentioned on this podcast before that I had a really fun time with this era of NXT when it was like the first year of it being on the network, or even two, you know. But I really loved a lot of these people, and I liked how it was more developmentally feeling. And I liked watching these people develop. And this story, it had so much buildup, months and months it felt like. And I didn't rewatch them, but throughout the event, throughout this whole takeover, there's these video packages for each of the four guys that I remember being pretty great. It just felt like it's not the culmination. It's a culmination, even though, but it's not like a final point because the story must go on, and this really sets up the next step in Neville's championship and these guys' stories. But there was such build to it over so long, and I really, you know, I miss Tyson Kidd, and I miss seeing Tyler Breeze get to do.
Yeah.
Get to do as much as he does in NXT. And I mean, that's not, he's still wrestling. I mean, Tyson Kidd is like a really, it's just a tragedy because he's my favorite thing this match. And he's my favorite thing in all. I mean, he works, this match doesn't work without all of the guys, I think. But
yes, yes. Everyone is contributing in their own special way to make it a special match. I think that there are, well, there's two things that stood out immediately to me, is that I like the intimate feel that NXT has. It has like the early ECW feel. It's like super culty, but that's part of its charm. It's wrestling for wrestling fans, basically. Like it's, you know, these people front and back, and you're wholeheartedly invested in each of their storylines. If you were there in the crowd, and if you're watching it this early in the life of it as an organization and the life of the network overall, like you're the first ones to buy in, literally. Tyson Kidd, I remember whenever he first came in as part of the New Heart Foundation with Harry Smith, who was like related to Davey Boy, and Natalya, and knowing how that storyline kind of went, how they kind of like, it wasn't a great fit, and seeing how Tyson Kidd had grown into really being a really interesting and fun heel, like dirtbag character, was really great. And for anyone who's listening to the podcast that doesn't know the story of Tyson Kidd, he suffered a life-threatening neck injury from a botched muscle buster by Samoa Joe. In doing some research for this episode of the podcast, I found out that the injury that he had, apparently there's a 5% rate of survival from this crazy like fluke injury that he received. So it's a miracle that he's alive to begin with. It's a miracle that he can even fucking walk.
Yeah,
it's amazing. The fact that he made it kind of out of the, you know, made it out alive is amazing. I mean, we lost him as a wrestler, but we still have him. You know, I feel like that would be the the biggest tragedy. But his wrestling here is the best. He's great. He's absolutely great. He does, like, the sequence between Sami Zayn and Tyson Kidd was one of my favorite portions of this match. Like, there was a really crazy leg drop that Kidd did to Zayn whenever he was kind of resting
caught on the ropes.
Caught in the ropes. Like, it was a totally predictable spot because you could tell that Zayn was setting himself up, you know, bouncing himself for a move. But, you know,
it looked cool.
It looked cool. It worked really well. Also, Neville. He's the fucking man.
Well, I have a question for you about Neville because, you know, this match to me is, there's a few dynamics going on in this match. Going into it, you've got two faces, Neville and Zayn, two good guys.
Yeah.
And then you've got two villains, but one is Tyler Breeze, who's like an egotistical, his villainy comes from a place in his character where, you know, he wouldn't see it as, it's not as, Tyson Kidd is like a supervillain, and Tyler Breeze is just like a conceited egomaniac. Tyson Kidd, I guess, his character is also an egomaniac. He thinks he deserves all this and that, and he's the best. But
in a different way, it's like in a more like sinister way than Tyler would be.
You can see that where Kidd organizes Breeze helping him do all these double teams on the good guys.
Yeah.
But then Breeze will take these. There's that moment where they do a double team and then Tyson Kidd turns to like gloat and Breeze just goes into the pin. You know what I mean? Like, Kidd's like, what?
I think there was an interesting dynamic throughout the story where between each of the two sides, the good side and the bad side, you had a veteran and kind of an underdog, I guess, within that either heel or face role. And with the example that you just gave of Kidd, you know, they're doing a tandem move and Kidd goes to bloat, but Breeze goes for the pin. It's like, you know, that veteran is, you know, too caught up in himself and the young upstart rookie is really gunning for the win.
Yeah,
because he wants to take advantage of the opportunity.
But it's also like his character gloats about being good looking, but he's more. I just don't. And there's probably a billion examples of Tyler Breeze doing a move and then gloating about it. But Tyler Breeze to me seems like he's gonna throw a fit when he doesn't win, which he does greatly in his couple major spots in this match. When he, after he misses those pins and then he just throws that fit in the ring and the crowd is screaming. Kidd is going to maybe yell at the ref instead of throw a fit. You know, like there's a subtle difference in the type of villain there. But so Kidd is the supervillain in here. He's orchestrating the team ups with Breeze, but he's also controlling the ring. And the story of the majority of this match is Kidd kicking Neville out of the ring. Kidd not letting Neville get back in the ring so he can take it to people one-on-one, right?
Well, yeah.
It is genius. He seems like the master in there, you know?
Well, one of the great things about a Fatal 4-Way match is that the champion doesn't have to get pinned in order to lose the title. So that's really great wrestling, like, science there. And in assessing who your opponents are, and also understanding that the strongest person, ability-wise, is obviously the champion. You want to make sure that they are just completely out of the way, literally.
Yeah. So, I mean, the story going in, that you have the commentators telling you that, like, oh, Tyson was convinced, he kept saying leading up to this match, that if he got Breeze in the sharpshooter, he could win. So you see him working Breeze and then trying to get him the sharpshooter. You also have Tyson going for Zayn instead of Neville, which Zayn is the consummate underdog, and he always has this, he's always losing matches by a thread, right? And the story coming out of this match of Neville versus Zayn, with Neville's kind of spin to being like a anti-hero or tweener type character, you have...
Yeah.
The story there that Neville unfortunately says a billion times leading up to their championship match is, Sammy, you can't win the big one. People always tell Sammy that he can't win the big one. So it's smart for Kid to keep the champ out and go after, you know, the rookie and the guy who can't win the big one.
Yeah, yeah.
My question you was...
Oh, sure.
Does Neville being repeatedly kicked out of the ring make him look like a chump? Or does it not matter in a 25-minute fatal four-way where Neville can just come in, do cool moves, hit the right arrow, and look super impressive at the drop of a hat?
It's the latter that I agree with. I think that with even if it was a triple threat match, totally different dynamic. Mm-hmm. In a fatal four-way, it works.
Yeah.
It works. It works with him not being in there all the time. Also, it allows you to really invest in whoever is in control. Like whenever Breeze comes in and does like some crazy shit and like goes for the pin like multiple times, like you're 100% locked in the fact that Breeze could potentially win this. Yeah. Each person, whenever they take advantage and take control of the match later in the match, like after like the 15-minute mark, they set it up so that the possibility of any one of those four competitors winning is a real possibility. Like Breeze could win. Kid could totally win. Zayn could pull it out. And Neville could retain. I think that the way that they told the story of Neville turning on Zayn, I thought was really well done.
Yeah.
Because there was the tease of, you know, them going after each other.
Early on. Earlier, and then the bad guys break it up. Yeah.
And then the bad guys break it up. That was great. Also, some really good just overall work in the match. Like the insane Tree of Woe suplex powerbomb spot.
Those are never
like,
my
favorite. Crazy.
But it was crazy. It looks awesome.
It was crazy. But then that presented a scenario where Zayn could take control and present a scenario where you think that he is actually going to win.
Oh, yeah.
But then Neville busts it up, totally takes advantage of the work that Zayn had done. Granted, he does hit the red arrow on Kid. It looks awesome. So you're still getting the move over.
Yeah.
You're still giving the spectators what they want. But you're also furthering the dissension storyline between those two characters, between Zayn and Neville.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great match. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I just have other ways to say all that same stuff. I do want to point out Neville catching Breeze's hand when he goes to tap in the sharpshooter really made my day. Also,
see, that was the one thing that I didn't like in the match.
You didn't like it?
No.
I thought
it
was hilarious.
Well, like
it. I liked how the commentary is putting over how Kid has been boasting about how he can take Breeze out with a sharpshooter. And I love how Kid mushes Breeze's face trying to get him in to the sharpshooter.
Yes.
And then he gets him in.
I totally was down.
And then Neville
with that.
Slides in and catches the arm. And the reason I like that is because it's an echo of Neville pulling the ref out of the ring later in the match when he's about to count the thing. And then it's also kind of an echo of Zayn trying to dive in at the end of the match to block Neville's pin, and he just can't get there. He's really like, you can the camera is there, so when Neville's getting that count, Zayn is coming under the rope, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, he actually makes
inches
it inside
away from breaking the
he
pin.
He makes it inside the ring, technically, whenever the ref's coming down for the three count.
Yeah.
And, like,
you
just
have that
know
echo,
it's like, Zayn, you're too fucked up to, like, you're too, like,
well, he can't win
beat
the big
up
one. He can't. He's always just a hair away. But, like,
he's
that's the thing. That echo was really, really, really was nice.
So, you pointing that out, like, I get that. In watching the match, you know, having Neville come in and it just and stopping the tap out by holding his arm in like a cinch, it just looked hokey. It looked very indie. It looked fucking indie to me, which has its place. And, you know, the next match that we're going to discuss has a lot of fucking indie shit in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of the pot calling the kettle black here.
Yeah.
But that was the one part of the match that I felt I wish they hadn't have done that. Because it totally took me out of the full buy-in that I had as a viewer of the match.
Okay. I
guess
so
that's
I get
just
that.
me. But you explaining the echo portion of it, how it kind of makes sense in the larger kind of like scope of the match, makes sense. So
the other thing
I
for me
still
was
don't
that
love it, but I'm more on board with it.
You have to have moments where everyone is maybe going to win, and then it gets broken up. And that was the Kidd moment, I think, where I was like, oh my God, Tyson Kidd is going to win. You know, like, I've seen this match before, but I was still like, woo-hoo, you know, it got me. I bought in. I guess if you don't have, do you have any closing remarks? Or I have one, like, kind of last thing.
What do you finish up on this one.
Okay. The thing I alluded to at the start was, this match is really, really fun. I think this is a very high-quality match. And in fact, I was more excited to rewatch this match during the entrances and stuff than I have been to watch the main events of the last 4 to 6 takeovers. I actually think that the takeover main events for the last year, year and a half, have had much bigger star power. And the wrestling is as good or better, probably. But I never care as much. I never am like, oh my God, I can't wait to see these guys fight, you know?
Sure.
Whereas at this time, I really wanted to see these guys fight. And I had, watching this match and knowing what happens, I'm like, oh, no duh. Neville retains, but in a way that spins it towards him fucking with Zayn. And then Zayn, you know what I mean? Like, the story makes sense. But at the time, I could have thought any of these guys would have walked out as champ. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't know. Anyway, the main thing I want to say is this probably was not the match that I really wanted to pick because it's a fatal four-way. I like that it has all these guys in it, but in a fatal four-way, these guys have to constantly be moving and doing specific spots and governing their placement in and around the ring, and it's amazing that they're able to do that and do it so well and time everything so well and get in as much character and as much of the little things, the details that they do. But the reasons I like these guys, you don't see, because this match is so jam-packed, there's like not enough. I feel like in a 10 or 12 minute regular NXT Tyson Kidd match, you get more of like the meaning of Tyson Kidd than you do in a 24 minute fatal four way. You know what I mean? Like there's more I wanted to see from each of these guys than I remembered. That I was like, oh man, if only I could have picked 3 matches, you know, or 2 one-on-one matches, like Zayn Kidd and Breeze Neville or something, or Breeze Zayn and Neville Kidd from random NXT episodes, and you probably would have seen more, like Tyson Kidd does his springboard elbow drop, but it gets countered. But like, that's an awesome move. Like, there's all these things that these guys do that we didn't get to see here because they're running around and cramming all this stuff into this one, like, mega fatal four-way match.
Well, you have the freedom of this podcast.
I can choose
you
have another the freedom. One.
You can choose another one if you
Give
want.
Give me 10 episodes and I'll choose another thing. Let's move on to Jason's match, match number 2.
Let's move on to match number 2. Which is Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn for the ECW television title from Living Dangerously 1999.
Jason loves television titles.
Jason does love television titles.
Also, Jason knows a lot about music rights.
Oh, yes. I was going to bring that shit up. I was. So the generic Biddle music. Well, that is RVD's fucking theme is to cover up, I think,
Pantera,
a Pantera,
right? Yeah, Walk.
Yeah. Do you like
I
Pantera?
Was so some, yeah. There's like an idea of Pantera that I don't like, and then there's like the actual experience of listening to their songs that I often do. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. That does make sense. Were you an ECW fan?
Yes. One of my notes here is I watched this in 1999, and I think it was the show.
Oh, you
then.
Watched it live?
Yeah, pretty sure. Either That's I watched awesome. It live or I watched it like shortly thereafter, like on a VHS tape or something.
Man. See, I never watched ECW like in its prime because I didn't have it in Tennessee. But I read about it in the wrestling magazines like Pro Wrestling Illustrated and The Wrestler and all that stuff. So all the Bill After mags would like cover it.
We watched
very well.
We watched the pay-per-views. I don't remember watching ECW TV, but we would buy, I think my friend Matt got it, and we watched a little bit, and we had, you know, like VHS tapes of stuff from like in 99, you could get tapes from stuff from 98 or whatever of just like compilations of matches, like on the tape market, like in those magazines. And we actually went to at least one ECW house show, the Michigan State Fairgrounds, which is down the street from where I live right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we we met Balls Mahoney and Nova and stuff, because we walked around the back. Like, it's just a state, it was like a state fair, like, arena slash, they probably had, like, cow auctions there at the state fair. But it was this fucking arena, and, like, we were walking around the arena, and I remember our friend Dan going, "There's Balls Mahoney. Hey, Balls." And Balls like, "Hey, guys." And talked to us, and we talked to Noah. It was just like, what the fuck is going on?
Was this whenever they were on TNN, or was this before? Was this whenever they had the nationwide TV deal?
You know, this would have been, I think, 1999. And I think I know that because it came up with my brother remembered this, and I did not. Maybe it was 98. The One Man Gang was at the house show he went to. And he was only in ECW for a very small period of time. And I'm pretty sure we saw him fight Sabu.
Wow.
I could be wrong. I'm reasonably certain. And my brother told me that, and I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? One Man Gang? No, he didn't. And then it was. He was right. But
So whenever... So I was really excited whenever ECW finally got their TV deal with TNN in 99, like September 99, because I could finally see Rob Van Dam and Chris Candido and
Shane Douglas,
Lance Storm, and like all these, and the Dudley Boys. Like I had heard so much about the Dudley Boys, and I would finally be able to actually see them. Yeah. So, you know, whenever I was able to finally see ECW, like, it was obviously it was past its prime, but this match was only in March, so even like 6 months before the TV deal, they're still like putting on great like matches. Like they, that's the one thing, is like, for all of the like garbage that ECW did and all of the shit wrestling that they put out, there were still really great workers that worked in that company. And this Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn match is amazing.
Well, WCW took their whole cruiserweight division from ECW.
Yes,
like, there's I a mean, they, the yeah. ECW. ECW was still Heyman's ECW when it was like Eddie Guerrero and Psychosis or whatever, right? I was like, and Malenko was there and all those guys.
Do you want to know something really interesting about that? With ECW, whenever it started to make the transition, and you had people like Steve Austin that were there, like 96, something like that. Vince McMahon put Paul Heyman on his payroll.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Would pay him.
It's in the Monday Night Wars, buddy.
Yeah, it's in the Monday Night War. No, it's in the ECW documentary.
It's also in the Monday Night Wars.
Put him on a retainer. Put him on $1,000. But, like, it was a scenario where WCW completely just, like, pillaged their fucking roster and stole so many people. I mean, fucking the first person that they stole was Sabu, technically. Sabu was on some of the early episodes of Nitro.
That's crazy.
Like, Sabu, I remember him having like a crazy feud over the TV title with the Disco Inferno.
Wow.
So it's a lot.
So we have a match where we have a guy that is, I believe, recently transplanted to ECW from WCW, where he was underutilized, which I remember, and which Joey Styles reminds me of.
Who, Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn? Yeah.
Jerry Lynn in WCW, he was just a cool guy who came out and wrestled all right?
Well, he was also underneath a mask as well. He would wrestle both as a masked character and as just straight old Jerry Lynn.
Oh, wow. But here he becomes the new effing show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this match is awesome. Like, this match is awesome. Like, there's a lot of shit. There's so much shit in this match to go through. Like, listeners, if you've never seen this match before, please go watch it. It is...
It's one of those matches like, where they do all of the moves. Not
they
really.
Do everything.
They don't do every move, of course. But they do... And they order them in a way where it's like, you know... If you've seen a wrestler and you're a wrestler's fan and they're the type of wrestler who gets to have a match on a pay-per-view that goes for 15, 10, 15, 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Then you know, like, when they do this spot or that spot, that's not the end. And then, like, you know, two-thirds into the match, they're going to hit this sort of move. And then because it's a pay-per-view, that's not really the end either. And then 5 minutes later... they're going to hit their real finisher, and then you know that's the end. So, like, you kind of know. But in a match like this, they do all these other moves, but in an order in which you're like, oh, my God, that German suplex, he's definitely going to win. No, he's not, obviously. You know,
well,
like,
you know what it is. It's constant rising action.
It's like that cage match you picked.
But it's constant rising action. I mean, just for example... there's a spot where RVD ends up in some like crazy like split leg yoga pose.
That's great. That was so
and
great.
Fucking Jerry Lynn does a
leg
totally
drop.
Takes advantage of that and does a leg drop on top of him. There's like crazy aerial moves to the outside, which the outside has no crash pads.
I know.
And
they
also
just,
crazy...
whenever they pull the barrier out so they can launch over it into the crowd, it just looks like it's gonna be brutal, and then is brutal. I want to say also, this is the match of the leg drop.
There's
a good
so many
two dozen leg
drops.
Drops.
There's not just regular leg drops. There are guillotine leg drops out the wazoo.
Story in the match is that Lynn injures his knee, and Joey Styles like so much of his offense is arrow, and I'm like, so much of his offense is a fucking leg drop. How's he gonna do leg drops with an injured knee?
Yeah, I mean it's crazy. I mean there's springboard guillotine leg drops. There's a fucking crazy looking surfboard, which I always thought that the surfboard was a really weird move. But seeing two dudes who were both jacked but lean at the same time, you could see the actual strength and agility and balance that you have.
Yeah,
on both wrestlers' parts in order to pull off the surfboard. So
yeah.
I felt like I truly understood what the fuck the surfboard is actually supposed to be and watching it.
Some guys will get, and I think you're right in that the surfboard needs both wrestlers, because the wrestler applying the surfboard, who's on the bottom, needs to really be trying to bend the other guy, and the other guy needs to be arching their back so they look bent to make it look like they're hurting. But so often people will get into the surfboard and then just go back and it looks like they're just sitting there as a diorama. You know what I mean? That no pressure is being applied.
Yeah,
that the guy isn't
like
being stretched and bent. And it doesn't, it just looks like a weird gymnast move instead of, you know, a tandem gymnast move instead of a painful stretch, you know? This one looks like a painful stretch.
Yeah, I think that this match... one of the reasons why I really like this match, which I picked this match because I had never seen it before.
Oh, really?
This is my first time watching this match.
That's awesome.
I had seen the rematch, which takes place at like Hardcore Heaven or something like that. That's like in like 3 months later, which is an even better match, I think, than this.
Holy smokes.
And this is still like an amazing match. But I picked it because I wanted to watch something that I'd never seen before.
Cool.
And from two wrestlers that I know that I knew would put on a good match. So I liked the fact that there was like classic ECW shit where there's chair spots, there's table spots, they're fighting out into the crowd. Both RVD and Lynn being kind of like aerial maneuver style wrestlers doing like crazy shit, jumping into the crowd, doing, you know, off the top rope moves and stuff like that. But also the science, the scientific wrestling aspect was something that was really surprising to me, because I was just expecting something that was going to be really fast paced, more kind of like violent, more so than scientific. The science of the match took me by surprise. There was still all the elements that made it an ECW match there, but it was a kind of a classic wrestling match, or as classic of a wrestling match as you could have in 1999.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about how silly and awesome RVD is at the same time. So even in 1999, a casual person seeing him would think that he was silly, but then also that he was pretty cool. Once they saw his attitude and kind of... So here's the thing. His look is... He's kind of a good-looking dude, but he wears these absurd yet awesome singlets, and he has this silly ponytail, and he's like doing jumping jacks in the ring, and he's clearly a stoner, and it's like he's just weird, like, mash of... He has a ton of character. When you combine how much character he has with his skill in wrestling, like you were saying, the scientific wrestling, but also the crazy wrestling of ECW, it makes total sense why he is a guy who can still come back to WWE for a year and seem like a credible... He's old, but like, and seem like a credible competitor. He just has an it factor type thing.
He does. He doesn't... His only real character is that he's a really good wrestler, and he makes weed references.
But I think when you factor in his airbrush singlets and his silly ponytail and his Rob Van Dam, what I'm doing right now is his thumb pointing to himself on each syllable of that. He and his kind of like, he acts like a jokey guy around the ring, you know, like he doesn't take... It's not like he doesn't take Jerry Lynn totally seriously. He just doesn't take anything that seriously because he's so confident until he starts going. And then he's doing all these cool moves, you know.
Well, one thing that I have to actually take back what I said, that he doesn't really have a character besides that he's a good wrestler and he makes weed references. His original character in ECW was, he was Mr. Monday Night. Mm-hmm. He was so... And he would openly discuss the fact that he was negotiating with WCW or WWF. He used that as a heel tactic, though.
Yeah, but he's too lovable.
Oh, he's too fucking lovable. He's great, but that's like, that just clicked. That I just remembered that was his one of his original like gimmicks, and then slowly the association of him and Sabu together, mainly from them working in Japan together as well.
Here's the thing that I don't think we have time to get into, but maybe we should pick a match in the future to get into it. Bill Alfonso.
Oh, yeah.
I'm holding up my hands and I'm like, not shrugging, I'm just sort of in awe of the being that is Bill Alfonso. Let's table that for a future podcast, but
we'll
I would
table
love
it because
to hear about who he is and what his history is.
Fonzie's got a weird history,
weird.
which we will get into because it's coming in a podcast
in the future
to be recorded in the future.
But the last thing I'm going to say about this match is the ending. I have never been a big splash fan, especially a splash that's not from the top rope. Let's just say like a running splash. Big E's is kind of cool. Like big giant dudes are cool, but even so, it just seems like a lazy move. And frog splashes, also not my favorite. But when someone does a really good frog splash, it is awesome. And there's a lot of people that do them. You know, I guess I've seen Eddie Guerrero do some great ones. I've also seen him do ones that I didn't want to cheer for. I've seen more modern people like Kevin Owens do a great frog splash. Or, this is going to sound weird, Wesley Blake from Blake and Murphy in NXT. But this Rob Van Dam's 5-star frog splash, almost across the entire ring, and he rotates in midair so he can land on him.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. You've seen so many unbelievable things. Then he goes up to his frog splash, and I'm looking at him climbing the turnbuckles, and I'm like, oh yeah, he does this frog splash. I've never been a big frog splash guy. But then I look at Jerry Lynn and where he is in the ring, and I'm like, maybe he's just climbing up to do his RVD point, because there's no way he flies through the air. It is insane. I couldn't believe he was actually going to do that. Anyway, that was pretty awesome. Jason, how do you want to do you? Hey, if you want to say like 20 more minutes of stuff about this, maybe not that much. Go for it. I don't mean to cut you off, but
not going to. I think that
good pick.
50. Again, the television title. Doesn't matter what fucking organization.
The shenanigans in this match are that they run out of time. And then Jerry Lynn is just a consummate professional, and he's like, I respect this guy. That was bullshit. Let's put 5 more minutes on. He almost wins. Because the ref was going to award him the belt out of nowhere?
He was going to award I don't know exactly why he was going to award him the belt. I don't understand.
That's not what happens when the time limit is done. They don't just go, I like Jerry Lynn better in this match. Let's give him the belt.
No, I don't know if it was like a fucking ref decision or some weird, like they're fucking taking score at the fucking table. I don't understand. Yeah, but anyway, so it goes to a 15-minute time limit. They end up going for 5 more minutes. Fucking crazy Van Damminator to Jerry Lynn.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. And then the aforementioned 5-star frog splash, and it's over. It's great. One thing to note is that in the rematch that takes place at Hardcore Heaven, no time limit television title match.
Oh,
special. So it ends up going about 25 or 30.
Yeah.
And awesome. So that's another contender. I think that we started with NXT, which is, you know, has that cult kind of feel of ECW, of early ECW. Then, you know, we're going to an actual ECW match with this RVD and Jerry Lynn match. And then match number three,
the random match generators pick. Fit Finlay versus Meng versus Norman Smiley.
Smiley.
They pronounce it Smiley at this point in his career. So Norman Smiley versus Brian Knobbs in a fatal four-way for the WCW Hardcore Championship from Sold Out 2000, January 16, 2000. First of all, I want to say they call this match For the Hard Way. That's like the official name of this match, apparently. That is the dumbest match name I've ever heard. They say it a good 10 times during the match.
Oh, man.
It blows my mind. A lot of things blow my mind about this match. For the Hard Way is terrible.
So agreed.
Because there's stuff I actually like in this match.
Well, let's not give this match that much credit.
Bobby Heenan says.
No. Go ahead. What does Bobby Heenan say? I made note of it as well.
This is the best hardcore match he's ever seen.
Well, fuck. I saw. So whenever I pulled this up on the network, I saw the placement.
That's what you're talking about when he says this
is
the best hardcore match
about.
I've ever
Bobby
seen.
Bobby Heenan, obviously, fucking looking at his like his fucking check stub
I don't think he was lying.
Eventual. You WCW, don't think he would lie?
WCW and WWF hardcore matches almost always blow, especially when they don't have a main eventer in them. Like,
man, this is so bad.
Maybe when
this
WWF
is, like, really
had
bad.
Mankind in the hardcore matches, they weren't bad. But like I forgot WCW had a hardcore fucking title.
Oh, dude, I did not forget. And this was a fucking slap in the face reminder. Well, first of all, whenever I pulled this up on the network, I saw the placement of the dots. And I was like, oh, this won't last long.
No.
But this is fucking ridiculous. Like, Brian Knobbs looks like a lost Dudley boy.
No, here's the thing. This should be a tag match, because apparently Meng and Smiley had become pals, sort of. And Brian Knobbs, Finlay is mentoring Brian Knobbs, which is weird because Brian Knobbs is like 80 years old. And they're total Dudley Boy knockoffs.
Yeah, it's fucked
it's
up.
It's like WCW bookers were like, wouldn't the Dudleys be cooler if they were both white? And then they just put them in Dudley Boy. They just put him in Dudley Boy outfits. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Also,
fucked up.
Brian Knobbs is in pretty great shape for Brian Knobbs. But but I don't understand who in their right mind ever in the history of the world saw Brian Knobbs and thought money. Like,
do you know who actually saw that and said
pal, right?
money? Yeah, Hogan. Yeah. Fucking Hogan. Like,
but
this is Hulk Hogan's. This is Hulk Hogan's fault. We got the fucking Shamrock Dudley and fucking Stinky Dudley. Then we got fucking
wait.
Then we got fucking the Throat Spiker Supreme.
Ming.
Mr. Golden Spike himself, fucking Ming.
With a kick-ass fro.
With a badass fro.
And he's still using the same fucking music as he was in 1996. Everyone else has, like, butt rock music. And then he comes out to a huge arena and with just this whistling. He's a little less jacked than he was in 96, but he no-sells headshots like a pro.
Well, do you know what that? Well,
yeah,
that
Samoans,
goes back to
you can't hurt their head.
Yeah, you can't hurt a Samoan's head.
It's
ridiculous.
Hilarious.
And then Norman Smiley. All I remember is that he used to wear shitty, awkward yellow trunks and do a big wiggle.
Yeah, he does a little great dance. He is amazing in this match. He's the good guy. He comes out in SWAT gear.
Who are we supposed to? Are we supposed to be?
He screams like a Looney Tune.
He screams like a fucking
and
war eagle woman. Like it is, or like a war eagle. Fuck, I don't fucking
a
know.
War eagle. What?
Yeah,
I have no idea
like
what you're talking about.
Like a screeching, fucking piercing.
Oh, okay, yeah, like a bird.
Yeah,
like a bird of prey. I think. How he yells, how he falls, he's like a wild coyote being tossed around the ring. And he was cracking me up.
He was the only one willing to take a bump in this match, by the way.
Oh, yeah. One of them just, like, who goes? Smiley tries to toss Knobbs into the apron, and Knobbs just I don't want to hit the apron. I'm just going to fall on the ground.
So he goes fucking.
What an asshole.
He's Knobbs with an awkward, I don't want to hit the ring apron bump.
No,
which is just
he
like.
He just goes, just falls on the ground. It's terrible.
Over.
He's supposed to be a Dudley boy, and he's just barely taking any moves.
Heenan says that what we really need is prison guards with hoses in this match.
Yeah. Oh, man. Also, the live camera misses the table spot.
Oh, dude, I fucking remember that, too.
They
like,
show
okay,
the replay after the match.
We see a table, okay? And then they, like, get a close-up of fucking, like, Finley and Smiley.
Smiley in a chair, and Smiley's going, ah!
Yeah, they're fucking squealing at each other. And then we hear the table break, but that's just how, like, of a shit show WCW was at that time, where even the fucking big spot with the table... You can't, and you're trying to fucking do a knockoff Dudley Boy gimmick. Their whole thing is fucking tables. You miss the fucking table.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's so bad. And it's like a table resting up against the ring apron. It's not even set up. No, wait. Maybe it was set up. But
well,
then
fuck,
they show it.
It's not even set up in the fucking ring where you can see it. A
you
fucking
know,
fourth of the crowd can see it.
You know what makes me think that this is, that they really don't know what they're doing? Is that... One of the guys hits...
Please tell me what the one sign is.
No, this was just a subtle thing to me. And I don't... Maybe I'm forgetting times in ECW where people who knew what they were doing did this. But when they go into the crowd, one of the guys, I want to say it's Knobbs, hits another guy dead in the head really hard with like a thick rubber trash can.
Yes.
There's a reason why they use thin metal trash cans when they do trash can spots, because there's tons of give.
Oh, yeah.
On a thick rubber trash can, there's not much give. I hit someone, a friend in the head, like doing what you're not supposed to do, which is pretending to do wrestling moves. I wailed a friend in the head with like a thick Tupperware, like a bus rack or bus tub, like a busser from a restaurant.
Yeah.
I probably gave him a concussion. and or hurt or like impacted a vertebrae or something. It hurt so bad. I felt so sorry. He was like, it really hurt him. He's a big dude too, with a big head. So when I saw them pick up this big ass, like heavy duty rubber, like Rubbermaid type garbage can, and it just full force smack some guy with it, I was just like, you moron. Because it doesn't look cool. It just bounces off his head, you know?
Oh yeah.
It just hurts. It's like it's Bret Hart talking about a chop.
Yeah. Did you watch WCW during this time, Joe?
I had checked out of WCW. In fact, I was in the process of checking out of wrestling overall in 2000. What happened was my brother and his friends, the majority of people I watch wrestling with, they graduated in 99, and I was then watching pay-per-views primarily on my own.
Sure.
Sometimes my brother would come home from college, maybe with one of his friends or something, and or I'd get my friend Eric over and we would watch something. I pretty much made it to Y2J debuting in WWE,
Yeah.
and then watched like a little bit after, but that's when I
And that
fell
was it.
off because I didn't have the crew, you
Got
know.
it.
But
Yeah.
maybe I was still watching some, but I wasn't wasting my time on fucking WCW. That was for certain. I mean, really, I was just waiting for Jericho to leave WCW at that point, and then he did, and I was like, fuck these idiots. In hindsight, I really wanted to know more about the friendship of Meng and Norman Smiley. And then at the end of the match, I was like, yay, this is great. Because, well, when the actual match ends, I was booing. I thought that was stupid.
So the actual match ends whenever Smiley or Smiley gets his riot shield. He gets hit with his own riot shield by Knobs, a very svelte Brian Knobs, and he retains the Hardcore Championship. WCW is like, in their hardcore scene, it's like an extreme PG version of hardcore wrestling, almost borderline like G. It's like fucking Care Bears
It was
hardcore
pathetic.
wrestling. It was actually pathetic. It epitomized garbage wrestling. Like, this was complete garbage. I still enjoyed watching it, but it was
Yeah,
complete
me too.
garbage.
I also think that just Brian Knobbs is a weird person. I feel like the Nasty Boys were never people you wanted to see in a match. Like no one was ever like, oh man, I hope the villainous Survivor Series team in this competition has the Nasty Boys on it. You know, like, but at least they were giant, fat, gross, like 80s street punks out of Final Fight or something. You know what I mean? Like they looked
Yeah,
like
yeah.
video game characters.
They look like Bebop and Rocksteady,
Exactly.
basically.
And then
So here's the fucking thing with the Nasty Boys is that they originated in the AWA in the late 80s. Then they came to WCW for a very brief run where they feuded with the Steiner Brothers over the US Tag Team Championship, which they have an amazing fucking match at Halloween Havoc 1990,
Oh,
with
that's
a
awesome.
loser leaves WCW match, and it is awesome. It's like 20 minutes long. It's fucking great. Whenever they came to the WWF, they were treated like a joke. They were like the
Okay, so
bastard tag team in Jimmy Hart's stable that'll never go anywhere. And then they fucking beat the Hart Foundation for the WWF Tag Team Championships. And then they go to WCW. They have crazy, like, proto. Well, no, not even proto. They have crazy, like, hardcore style matches, false count anywhere matches, with Cactus Jack and his partner at that time,
So
Max
Brian
Payne.
Knobbs has a pedigree of hardcore matches in a
Yes,
sense.
yes. I mean, he's such a shit, like, regular wrestler that whenever the.
So the problem with this match is it wasn't hardcore enough
It wasn't hardcore enough. Like, there's actually a
for
really,
Brian
like,
Knobbs.
ridiculous. Yeah, for Brian Knobbs.
Oh my God.
There's actually a ridiculous hardcore, or like a false count anywhere match between the Nasty Boys and Harlem Heat that takes place in the, like, mid 90s. That's really fucking fun and just ridiculous. Like, mustard gets spilled and there's falling all over the place.
I I gotta say, I'm really happy to hear that the Nasty Boys are worth watching. The thing I wanted to, regardless of Knobs having a pedigree, regardless of all this stuff, I don't understand why this is new logo WCW. This is rebranding WCW, right?
Yeah.
Why did WCW start losing the Monday Night Wars? A lot of reasons, but one of the top reasons was because they kept putting belts on fucking old guys from WWE's heyday no one really cared about seeing. So then it's the year 2000. Chris Jericho goes to WWF. WWF is riding high. A, they're going to keep having a hardcore belt. And B, they're going to make Brian Knobbs the champion. It just seems like, what fucking morons? Like, why what are you doing, you know? Like, I mean, and not to knock these old guys. I mean, Finley's best, like, era, I believe, is in the mid-2000s. That's what people love the most out of him.
Oh, yeah. Whenever he was on SmackDown, he was fucking great. I think that it goes back to...
But he was a veteran in the 90s.
Yeah, he was. He was. It goes back to what I was discussing with you before we started recording, Joe, how I'm currently reading The Death of WCW book.
Plug.
Right now. Plug. But one thing that I'm slowly realizing in reading this book, which is something that I've kind of known in the back of my head for a while, is that people always try to lay the corpse of WCW at the feet of, you know, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. The kind of like whenever they came into WCW is whenever the true death, you know, the death pangs started.
I don't think that's true at all.
I don't think that's true at all. But what I'm realizing is that I think that just Hulk Hogan coming into that system, he killed it. Because we look at the people who were holding belts at that time. It's what you said. It's old fucking dudes from WWF who are fucking still pushed as like contender, like people you should actually give a shit about. Like, who gives a fuck about Brian Knobbs? He's only got a belt because he's Hulk Hogan's friend. He doesn't need a fucking push. He looks like a shitty Dudley boy. Fucking
move. But
then
you have other people in it who are like Finley underutilized, especially in the shitty gimmick he's in this match. Mang, who's at least entertaining in this thing. But then you have someone like Norman Smiley, who's like a person who has created this own character for himself and despite all odds has been getting over, you know, for a year or two at this point. Why isn't he having the belt? You know, like
I think
Nash and Hall and Nash probably weren't the greatest when they were at the top of the heap in WCW, right? And they probably played into a lot of the negative aspects of the old guard. But if anything, they didn't ruin WCW. They gave WCW two more years of being on top. Or being on top at all.
If they didn't come to WCW and didn't have the NWO...
The WCW would have been gone. There would have been no Monday Night Wars, you know? They would have just...
Do you know what's really, really funny? Apparently, the tipping point in WCW's history is the meeting that Eric Bischoff had with Ted Turner, where Ted Turner was like, I'm, you know, continually getting my ass handed to me by Vince McMahon. How can we compete? Because he was thinking about closing WCW.
And he said, go live on Monday?
Yeah. That's the thing that fucking saved it. They gave it at least... At that point, it gave it like a year. And then they actually started to make money. That was the first... Yeah. Whenever Nitro started was whenever their house show attendance started to go up.
Yeah.
It started... They actually started to turn a profit, which they turned enough of a profit where the investment in Hall and Nash, they could do something like that. They could take a level of that star from the WWF and translate it into the WCW ecosystem.
Yeah. I guess what I'm just saying is that Brian Knobbs is my least favorite person in this match. And he walks in and out as the champ.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
And that is a big bummer. But Mang is pretty fun in this match. He kind of looks like he's having fun.
I want to see a fucking Mang and Finley match.
I want to
That's
see
like
a
that's like a
Mang.
Haas battle.
I want to see a Mang and Norman Smiley tag team run. I want to see a Mang and Norman Smiley buddy cop movie. I want to see pretty much any combination of Mang and Norman Smiley being pals, sort of, or thinking they're pals, you know? That is right up my alley. But I
Great.
think, you know what? I'm giving this match a thumbs up. Still a perfect score on all the matches we've ever watched. I don't think we've watched a match I don't like yet, or I didn't like watching yet.
I give this,
You can give it a negative if
I
you.
give it a
Someone should.
certified D plus.
What a compliment.
It's not absolute garbage,
From what I
but
saw
it's
flipping
not
through the
great.
rest of this pay-per-view, this might be the best match.
I don't think so.
No.
I ended up watching the Terry Funk and Kevin Nash
Oh,
match.
I didn't even see that.
That was
Is it,
actually
aren't there
pretty
like five Billy Kidman matches on this pay-per-view?
funny. He wrestles two matches, but there's
Because
also an
all their
unmarked.
storylines
There's
got
an
fucked up. I read the Wikipedia a little. We don't need to go
well,
into all of that, but.
there's also an unmarked match,
Oh, was that a
which is
Benoit?
the Ben, yeah, it's the
Yeah,
Benoit and
there's
Sid
always one
Vicious
of
match.
those.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but anyway,
This is
well that.
the podcast.
This is the podcast.
We're wrapping it up.
This, yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Hey,
We'll be
go to our
back.
blog and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and stuff.
Yeah.
TOOTF.tumblr.com and iTunes. There's a link there. Anyway, that's it. We're signing off. Thanks for watching, listening.
Signing off. Thanks for listening. Cool. That was better than